Welcome to The Writer and the Critic, a monthly podcast devoted mostly to speculative fiction, books, reviews, and the odd bit of idle gossip. I'm one of your hosts, Ian Mond. I'm the critic in the title. Well, sort of, I suppose. I have a, you know, I'm on a live journal. Does that count?
It counts. Okay. You write as well.
I haven't introduced you, so why are you talking?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, come on. Etiquette. So, and anyway, I was getting all rhetorical there. Just please. So I'm the critic, and the writer is, and here she is, the beautiful and the wonderful and the gorgeous, wearing a Joy Division t-shirt. Suicide. Terrible. Kirsten McDermott. Welcome. You're the writer.
I can talk now.
Yes,
please. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, I mean, you write too, and I criticise, so I think it's a bit of both.
So you're technically, you could be the critic?
No, well, I think we could be both.
All right, so that's complicated. Anyway, all I wanted to do, I wanted to start off, we're going to have a structure to this, obviously.
We should have a structure.
Because we shouldn't just ramble on
or
for 2 hours.
Or people will get very bored.
I'm already bored, but we don't want to ramble on for 2 hours. So I just wanted to say that we're doing this, not because we wanted to do podcasts, but because we felt compelled to do a podcast now that there are about 500 done by all our friends.
Well, you felt compelled.
No.
I felt compelled by you.
I could never force you to do anything. So you obviously felt compelled as well.
I felt encouraged. I'm not saying compelled.
Encouraged. Okay, whatever. So what are the podcasts you like, Kirsten?
I like listening to Galactic Suburbia.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, I think one of the better ones is Galactic Suburbia. I like Jonathan Strahan and Gary Wolfe. They're quite raw.
Yep. And Helen Merrick, I've just started listening to.
What's hers?
Intergalactic.
Why would you bring it up if you don't know the title?
I know.
Why
that's
would
such
you
bad
do
etiquette.
That? That's just I know. Embarrassing.
I can Google it though. No. Anyway, it's only just started, so it's not in my memory banks yet.
Yeah.
But I don't.
I could just see Helen Merrick doing her podcast. She's just listened to ours, going, "I really like the one with Ian and Kirsten. It's called I don't know." See, that would be rude from her.
But she's not rude. She's lovely.
I know. She beat me though.
Of course she did. She wrote a book.
We're going to have that discussion one day. I mean, look, I haven't read the book, but can
awesome
I just say,
book.
Before we get on to this whole podcast thing,
yes.
Kirsten told me, told me before the DIPMAS, for people in internationally don't know what the DIPMAS is, Google it, you'll find out. So, but anyway, the point is, it was an award and it was for best piece of criticism. Kirsten told me that she didn't vote for me before the award
no,
was
I
given.
Didn't vote for you.
Yeah, but you didn't have to tell me.
Well, I felt compelled to be honest.
Why? So now you're compelled.
Yes, now I'm compelled.
Okay, so you didn't feel encouraged, to be honest.
No, I was compelled.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, so let's move on because, look, Helen, you deserved it. You wrote a book. Apparently it's got lots of footnotes and references and stuff. I haven't actually read it. That's
a very good book.
But you have read it?
I have read it.
Yeah?
It's great.
Okay. And I've heard very good things about it on Galactic Suburbia. So they squee about it a lot, and I probably should read it at some point. So... Why are you laughing?
Oh, nothing.
Okay, whatever. So the other person, I think...
We should mention the book's name.
Oh, yeah.
Which is The Secret Feminist Cabal.
Oh, yeah, The Secret Feminist Cabal.
By Helen Merrick.
Yeah,
which
Helen
is a very good book.
It's good to see that you remember the title, but not the title of her podcast.
Oh, it's... yeah, I should Google that.
Okay. Box Cutters. We love Box... Do you actually listen to Box Cutters?
I have listened to one or two, but I actually don't listen to a huge amount of podcasts, I have to say. Not a massive amount.
You don't listen to Box Cutters regularly.
No, I don't. Because you know why?
Yeah, I don't. You're not my
because
friend.
Because I hardly watch television.
So what? They're funny.
I found it. It's the Pan-Galactic Interwebs. That's Helen's podcast, which she does.
You weren't listening to me. I'm talking
to
you about Box Cutters. You're checking the name of
Helen
Merrick.
This is the beauty of modern technology.
Oh, fantastic.
No, I did listen to it, but I don't watch. I watch hardly any television on television. So, yeah. I didn't really know the shows they were talking about, so.
You're a disappointment.
I know.
Do you listen to Terry Frost? I've got to say, Terry's probably like the grandfather of podcasting in Australia. Paleo Cinema Podcast.
I have listened to some of those. The only one I really listen to regularly is Tansies and
Alyssa and Alex.
Well, yeah, no, I was thinking of another podcast I listen to regularly, but I no, actually. No.
With Tansy in it?
No. Oh,
you're doing well. We've done, 5 minutes? And you forgot Helen Merrick's name of her. I should stop, shouldn't I?
You should really stop.
The good thing is, so we're in Kirsten's, what is this, dining room? What is this?
No, it's a dining room.
Yeah, is it?
This is where I dine.
Yeah, no, okay. So there's some dining involved. And we're in here, and she's far away enough from me so that if I do something really bad or say something bad, she can't hit me.
I actually am out of physical reach.
Yeah.
Which I should reconsider for the next one.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, or get a stick.
And oh, Grant, Bad Film Diaries is really good too.
Okay.
So there's actually a lot of podcasts, Aussie podcasts out there. I mean, I listen to international ones
as well. So why are we doing another one, Ian? Why did you twist my arm?
Well, here's the thing. I'm an egotist, and I felt it's about time that I put my voice out there on the interwebs because, you know, I want to hear myself. Because you do realise once we've done this one, I'm just going to listen to this on repeat. And actually, what I'll do is I'll edit your voice out because that's boring and you forget things, and I'll just listen to me.
Okay.
Okay, great. So, no, I think why we're doing this is because, well, why not do it? I mean, we've got a different take, though. It's not exactly the same as all the others. It's about 95% the same. Galactic Suburbia, we've basically copied your structure, but not in the way that you'd notice. And we haven't.
Well, they will now that you've told them.
Yeah, that should have said.
I think they'll notice. So we can edit that out.
Are we recording? anyway, yeah. But see, they were inspired by podcasts that I listened to, like Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing and the.
Oh, it's all just Sophonauts, a big incestuous one. Yeah, family.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Okay. All right. So let's move on. But the point is, we were inspired by them. We're doing something a little bit different, only very slightly different. So basically, this is the first time you're listening to us, which would make sense considering we've only just started doing this.
Oh, no, people might be listening in the future and they've gone backwards. Hello, future people.
Yeah, hello.
It's the present now.
Hey, how dated is this going to be? Like 5 years from now?
Oh, so dated.
We're doing news and like...
Yeah, dated. Go,
who's Elizabeth Moon?
Shall we move on?
Yeah, so good segue. Now. A lot of people have written about Elizabeth Moon, but no one's actually spoken about Elizabeth Moon. Unless Galactic Suburbia did a bit on Elizabeth Moon.
No, I think they definitely mentioned it a couple of times.
Because I didn't listen to the latest.
Well, they mentioned it when it sort of the Führer first happened. And then I think they mentioned it
did
again.
Did you say the Führer or the Furore?
Führer.
Okay. Can you please not, you know?
Anyway, yeah. So yes, they mentioned it when it first happened.
We should talk about it.
Okay. Well,
I cannot believe you. Before we did this, and I brought this up,
I didn't want to talk about it.
No, why not?
Because it's old news. It's old news. It's been done. Decisions have been made, and that's fine as far as I'm concerned. I don't think we need to rehash over stuff.
But
just because we're doing a podcast a month after it happened. Why do we need to go back?
Well, it's actually not a month. I mean, the whole thing started like 4 months ago. So, I mean, the decision to pull it from WizCon is a month after.
Yeah.
Okay. But it does raise a bigger issue of what I call authors gone bad.
Okay.
Do we at least believe that Elizabeth Moon went bad? I mean, that's...
Well, here's the thing. I don't know. I mean, I haven't read any of Elizabeth Moon's work that I know of. I may have read a short story in an anthology. I don't really know a lot about her as a writer. So I don't know if she went bad. I mean, some people have suggested she said things here and there, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's the internet now. Everything you think can be.
She said some pretty shitty things. There's our explicit tag, by the way. She said some pretty bad things.
She did. I mean, she did. And she deleted a lot of what she said, which was
bad.
Possibly worse than saying the things in the first place. Yes. I mean, for people who don't know, she wrote a rather long and diatribe-y post on her blog about Muslim Americans.
Oh, wait a second. It was actually about citizenship. So
and I was getting there.
Okay.
And immigrants and citizenship.
Such a
man. And the post itself has some distasteful things in it, I think. But it went into a very, very lengthy comments discussion, as these things do, which she closed down very shortly and deleted everything, including her own responses, which, from what I've seen of them, were, you know, contained things that were worse than what she said in her original post.
Yeah.
So now if you go back to her journal, there is the post. You have to sort of go looking for the web, the screenshots that people took.
Someone caged it.
Oh, a few people have taken screenshots and so on. But so I mean,
the thing about the internet, once you do it,
it's there forever.
Yeah.
It's there forever. You should really be careful about what you say on the internet.
Really?
Which is why I have no idea why I agreed to do this podcast. But anyway, we shall proceed.
No, well, you're not going to say anything particularly bad against Muslims on this podcast.
Well, no, not against Muslims.
You're going to say some bad things about Jews because I'm here.
Well, I wouldn't know, but I mean, I'm sure I will say things about some one or a writer or a book at some point.
God, this issue.
Anyway, moving on, because you're talking about writers gone
bad. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. please. You know,
I'm bringing you back.
No, it's all right. Okay.
Trying to maintain.
No, I'm just saying that there's this. Look, prior internet, you agree. Prior internet, mm-hmm. when we were young, you know.
Yes, when we were young,
because the internet didn't exist.
No, neither did mobile phones.
No, it's true. People don't know this, but there's only 12 months between the two of us.
Yeah,
that's very sweet.
Less than 12 months.
Yeah, 20 days less than 12. Mm. Yeah, that's that. Thanks for saying that. And you're the older one. I should point that out.
No, I am.
Yes. So. Before the internet, you'd read a book by an author, you'd fall in love with the author, and unless you actually physically met the author, you didn't know that he or she was a prick or a dick or a whatever. Can female authors be a prick?
I'm sure if they want to be. No, you're right. And because there wasn't... I mean, there's so much out there, even besides what the authors themselves might write on their own blogs or websites or whatever. I mean, everybody can post stories about meeting so-and-so at such and such place and what they said or did. And information is ubiquitous now. It's really hard to do or say anything in any kind of public or semi-public forum without anybody who wants to know finding out. But
there's plenty of people who speak, and okay, they might be a bit opinionated or whatever, but we're talking about like people like Dan Simmons, who said also terrible things about Muslims. I mean, I think Dan Simmons is a great writer, but you know,
it's hard, isn't it? It's hard when a writer that you like turns out to be a person that you probably wouldn't want to be friends with.
What about Stephen King? Yeah. Was found.
Yeah.
Wearing Nazi underpants, swastikas draped all over.
You know, people can just cut segments out, and now Stephen King will have been found wearing Nazi underpants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's because this stays on the internet.
Yes, okay. Forever.
Gotcha. But if I found that out, I'd be devastated.
Yeah, it's hard. Because I think the internet, we feel like we're friends with these people, and we're not. You know, unless you have actually met the people and you're in contact on a regular basis and, you know, actually see them, God forbid, from time to time. I mean, you're not really friends. And yet there's this false intimacy that's built up, I think, even more now with the internet and with a lot of writers keeping journals and even information which isn't so private. I mean, the accessibility is there.
Like what? What? Like what? That's not private. You mean like the secondhand?
No, I mean, if a writer just keeps a website with sheer publicity information and they don't say anything personal and, you know, it's all just about their work, I think that still leads to a greater intimacy.
Who are you talking about? I've got no idea what you're talking about.
Anyone.
So someone just sets up a website, puts stuff about their own stuff on it, but doesn't say anything insulting, and people say, well, they're terrible.
They wouldn't say they're terrible. I'm saying it leads to a greater intimacy with
author. Oh, I see, the intimacy side.
Yeah. So when you have and reading is a very intimate pastime anyway. Yeah, I think you always feel, I mean, I always did growing up and even now, you feel some sort of a bond with the writer of the book. And if you can then go online and read what they had for breakfast today and what they did last week and what they're doing next month, I mean, and if you're their friend on Facebook, that intimacy, which is, you know, quite fake, nevertheless feels quite real to you. So then when you find out something which your friend, in inverted commas...
You're doing air quotes on the podcast.
Yeah, but I emphasized it and then I said what I did. Yeah, when your friend then does something terrible, or says something terrible, or says something not nice, but about someone else who's your friend, it's kind of a quandary, and it possibly shouldn't be, because after all, the book hasn't changed, and really they weren't your friend anyway. So what's changed? You've read the book, you've liked the book, now you don't like the author. How does that really affect the way you read the book?
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
except it does.
I'd still buy an Elizabeth Moon book, and I'd read it if I was into one. I wouldn't stop. There is that sort of knee-jerk reaction that you say. I mean, unless you find out there, I don't know. Actually, well, how far would it have to go?
There's an author I don't read anymore.
Who?
I'm not saying.
Why not?
Because I'm not. But I don't read this author anymore because I don't like them. I don't think they're a very nice person. And it can't help but colour the way I read their work. So,
you know, I'm going to spend not the rest of this, just this podcast, but possibly the rest of our future podcasts. No, I won't, because that would be wrong.
No, I'm not going to. I'm not trash talking authors or writers as people. But
only when we review their books.
Well, the book is different. I mean, okay. The book is not a person. The book doesn't have feelings. But you know, I think it's a valid point. Because that's what we do with literary criticism. We often bring the author into it, the author's past, what the author thinks and their philosophies, what's happened to them that may have coloured their writing and influenced things that they've written about. So I think it's only fair that you bring it all in. And so if you find out that a writer is a raving loony racist, I think that colours what they've written, perhaps.
Okay. No. Yep. I mean, I'll still read Dan Simmons. I won't read Christopher Pike, although he's not a loony racist, he's just a nutcase. But is that trash talking?
A little bit.
Yeah, well, he could probably sue us.
And I
too.
Wasn't referring to any particular author when I said loony racist nutcase or whatever I said. I'm just saying.
Why,
you know,
are you backtracking already?
I'm not backtracking, I'm just being general.
Okay. All right, fine. Okay, well, look, that's that. That wasn't a news item, that was just...
That was you just wanting to bring up something.
Thanks. What about criticism and that whole... Did you read my live journal? Did you?
I did. Yeah. I did.
Yeah?
Yeah.
About the
Would you want to tell the people who didn't read your live journal?
Yeah. I mean, I don't actually have my live journal in front of me. My iPad's right behind me. And apparently if I move my head more than 1 inch, you won't be able to hear me. But I'll try and... Because I don't remember what I wrote. But it was about... Hopefully this won't cause any major interference in me doing this. But it was Martin Lewis... had written a... Do you know, Martin Lewis is a critic, one of us. Well, he probably doesn't think he's one of us, but I've just called him one of us. He's got a blog site called, I think, Everything Is Nice. I'm doing this all off the top of my head. So, and he's basically written a post about that people who do blog should... Just give me one sec here. People who do blog should take it more seriously, especially if they're blogging about literary stuff about...
If they're doing reviews.
Yeah, they're doing reviews, like I do. And I thought that was very interesting, because I'm not entirely sure... Because, you see, he's against the whole concept of there being gatekeepers, such as, you know, people saying, you know, we should only have a certain amount of blogs and we should have a quality control and that sort of stuff, which is, you know, that he says that's not what he's talking about, though people have sort of read it like that. But there's a good point there that... if you're going to do this sort of stuff, even this sort of podcasting, that we should be taking it seriously and looking both at the positive and the negative and not just saying how everything is A++ and the best. Or more to the point...
Is that what people do, though? I've read lots of negative reviews on people's blogs about books and movies and things.
He's also talking about the rigour, that the literary criticism should have some rigour to it. It shouldn't just be, oh, that was a bit rubbish.
Or like that.
Yeah.
Two thumbs up.
Yeah, correct.
But it depends what you're doing, isn't it? I mean, if you're just keeping a semi-private blog,
yeah.
And you know, you're not setting yourself up to be a literary critic or a movie critic, you're just keeping a record of stuff that you've liked or not liked.
He brings up that argument.
Then what's the problem with that?
No, because he says this is where I am quite sympathetic with his view, because he says if you're going to go out publicly, if it's friends locked, that's one thing, but if you're going to go out publicly and actually post about this stuff, then you know there's an implicit acknowledgement that you're doing this publicly, and therefore you should probably treat the platform you're on with some respect.
Live journal.
Yeah. It's a form of communication. It's a public form of
it
communication.
Is. So, but you know, you're not on the Guardian website. You're not on a website which is setting itself up as a platform for critical review.
No, but like my live journal, I basically just review stuff on it. Okay. So I am sending that. Okay, it's no Guardian website and it's no London Review of Books or whatever you want to call it. But it is still a bloggy, pretty badly put together without any tags, so you can't actually track anything
My website. So how would people find it?
No, they can't. But the point is that it's a platform. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm writing should. I want people to comment on it and read it and enjoy it. So shouldn't I respect the thing, that the art that I'm taking on, which is criticism? I should.
Well, possibly you should. Because if you are because if you are casting yourself in the role of a literary critic, then you possibly should.
So what you're saying is, so you've changed the goalpost. So you're saying the person who does a blog Blogs. I'm saying
that there's motive and there's intention, and I don't think necessarily everybody who, although people should certainly keep it in mind, but not everything that everybody posts is meant for public consumption.
Is this touching a nerve?
No, not at all. I'm just saying I don't see why some 15-year-old girl in her bedroom can't review movies and not worry about having to adopt some sort of critical rigor. It's silly. Not everybody has to be, the perfect critic. Sometimes
I don't think he's saying that people should be the perfect critic, but they should respect.
But why? When you see...
Because there's a lot of crap out there.
Of course there is. But, search engines, in particular Google, does a very good job of wading through the crap and prioritizing.
This is exactly the opposite.
No, Google will prioritize websites that get the most traffic, get the most hits, have the most relevant searches, and,
Are you saying it's an elitist argument?
I don't know that it's an elitist argument. I just think it's an argument that is perhaps disregarding what the internet is becoming. And the internet is many, many things for many people. And one of those things is an informal place to chat about stuff with your friends. And if people you don't know happen to look, you don't care.
Yeah, okay.
It's different. If you're setting your particular live journal or your Facebook page or your own website, whatever it is, up to be, a review site,
Can I just do the money quote?
Okay, what's the money quote? Do I need a tissue?
Oh, my God, please. We've already got an explicit tag. Don't take it that next step. He says, this is my reading voice. Therefore, I won't do it that way. Therefore, it should be a privilege to be writing in the age of the blog, and it would be nice to see more people making the most of the gift they have been given. Obviously, no one is obligated to do anything, but a little self-reflection never hurt anyone. The most common reason given for eschewing such reflection, is it eschewing? Eschewing such reflection, is that I'm just writing for me. That's what you said. See? He says, anyway. That is a lie.
Say they're writing for them. I said they're writing for them and their friends and their social circle. Of course they're not writing for just for them.
Yep, thank you. People are going to think I'm some sort of dominating male when really you just hurt me so much right now. That is a lie. If you really were just writing for yourself, you could keep a diary. People blog not just because they want to write, but because they want to be read. This means they have to publish, and once you are publishing publicly, what you write is fair game. Just because you can say something doesn't mean you should. Similarly, just because you have a platform doesn't mean you should use it. You disagree.
I think, I think it...
Let me say, it's Martin Lewis, because we should, say where it's from, so... I'm moving my head away from the microphone. Sorry about that, because Martin Lewis from Everything Is Nice.
But, I think it depends on your definition of published, doesn't it? We all know that the internet is problematic when it comes to deciding what work has been published in terms of criteria for award selection, anthologies and so on. And just because you've put something up on the web doesn't mean it's published in a formal sense. So, I don't know. Yes, and the idea of the internet as a gift that you have responsibility for, it's a bit twee. It's like saying, phones are a gift. You should be very careful when you call people. You should respect the gift of the phone. It's just, I think the internet is just becoming, and it has become, it's a form of communication. It's a way people warehouse their ideas and their thoughts and their plans. It's so many things. And one of the things it is a place where people can post opinions. That doesn't mean that every opinion needs to have the status of, formal reviews and criticism. It's ridiculous. It's like saying, otherwise, what? They should just all sit around on Twitter. Or doesn't he like Twitter either?
I don't even know if Martin's on Twitter. Martin, if you're listening to this, and that's probably unlikely, because you might be listening to this. Please feel free to write in if we're taking you out of context or saying something that we're not getting.
I absolutely agree with
him. Did you actually read the article?
I didn't. I've had a very busy week, as you know. I absolutely agree with him from the point of view of if you are reviewing, even in a, you know, a semi-formal fashion, so you're not working for someone, yeah. you're not reviewing, yeah. But if you're saying, look, I'm reviewing this, then I think it is, you know, you do have to give good and bad and adopt a critical stance.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that everyone's opinion on something is a review or is a piece of criticism. It's not. It's ridiculous. People can have opinions without being, you know, held at gunpoint against the wall and asked to justify them, you know, along strict critical guidelines.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I think he's also bemoaning, and I don't disagree with him, the fact that there's just a lack of really good crunchy, tansy, that's your word, crunchy, crunchy sites out there, blogger sites out there that review stuff and do
that's
it in an interesting way.
That's a different argument.
But there's a lot of sites out there that just A++ everything.
That's it? Fine, but that's a different argument. Because if there's a lack of critical sites, that's one thing, and it's one thing to bemoan that and to take on the sites that are putting themselves up as critical review sites and say you're not doing your job. That to the whole internet, I think is just insane.
Well, we'll probably have show notes for this podcast. I'm going to be writing those, aren't I?
I think you're going to be writing them.
So I'll do a link to the, yeah, wow. Can't you do them? Can we get Jason to do them?
No,
that's me.
It's you.
Okay. So I just thought, you know, I mean, you're paying me here for my voice, not for my show notes.
Anyway.
Okay. So, we will have a link to that particular, not to my live journal, but to that particular blog. And
we shall.
Yes. Okay. And, that's technically the way our news is going to go, which is it's not really news. It's just basically us crapping on about a couple of subjects that we find interesting. Based on news. But really, the core of the show, you would agree, is...
And this we're getting to the core of the show after 26 minutes.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I know. Probably should have started. But whatever. it's raw. The core of the show is that I recommend a book for you to read that you haven't read.
Yes.
And then you recommend a book for me to read that I haven't read.
Yes.
And hopefully there'll be sparks and pyrotechnics as a result.
But the codicil is that it has to. The person recommending the book has to have liked the book.
Yeah, yeah, you can't recommend
a book that you think is rubbish. Just
yeah, you can swear.
To make the other person do that.
Kirsten, you can swear.
I know I can. I reserve the swearing for when I really need it.
Okay. So which one do you want to start off with first? You can choose.
Oh, okay.
Because we did two books. We should probably mention them, shouldn't we?
We should.
Okay. And Dag, would you like to mention them?
Well, I recommended The Book Thief by Marcus Zusak for you.
Yes, that. Written in 2005, I think.
So
we'll spoil the whole book. You better have bloody read it by now.
It's a few years old.
Yeah, okay. So that The Book Thief, yeah.
Yep.
And I recommended Deathless by Catherine Valenti, who gave me a galley at Worldcon of her novel, due out in April 2011. So all of you should have read it, so we can spoil that too.
No one will have read it yet, unless you're listening to this in April 2011. Or yes. Afterwards.
Yeah. This
Hello, future people.
Can you stop doing that? You're freaking them out. What's going on in the future? There's actually a bunch of podcasts that I do, as I said, I listen to, and there is a bit of that sort of, hello, future people.
Just not, I'll stop doing it.
No, it's a cute voice, though, that you do.
Anyway.
Okay. You're censoring me. So which one are we starting with? We're doing the book.
First trying thing. To keep this below an hour, like we said. You go first.
All right. So we're doing The Book Thief?
We'll do The Book Thief.
Okay. By Marcus Zusak, as you said. I've got the book in front of me because I left my copy at home, so I'm borrowing yours. Not that I wrote
anything. That's important.
Oh, wow. This will go for 3 hours. All right, we're going. 2005. I was right.
There
so
you go.
Basically, is the girl Liesl or Liesl?
I'm saying
Liesl. So it's Liesl. Okay. So I'll read the back cover blurb. Is that's good enough, isn't it? We're going to struggle with Deathless. It doesn't have a back cover.
We're going to have it. Well, why don't you just sum up The Book Thief?
By doing the back cover blurb?
Okay, if you want to.
Okay. It's about Liesl. She's a girl. Her brother, actually in the very first couple of pages, her brother dies on a train. They're being taken to another family. It's not.
It's set.
Oh, you set your. Oh, yeah.
It's set in Germany.
Yeah, please interrupt.
Well,
it's set in Germany in 1939. Yes, that's quite important. That's
it is. It's pretty important.
Yeah, it's essential, actually.
Yeah.
But you've all read it, so you knew that. Yes. Anyway, on a train, a brother, and it's actually that really got to me. It's probably because I've just had a son, and just Yeah, it gets to you when you just, she wakes up and her brother's dead. Her baby brother, yeah, it's very sad. And she's been taken to another family in any case because I think it's because her mum's a communist. And so
They were taken away.
Yeah, so the impression is that her mum's gone to
camp. They've been
put in
with foster people.
Yeah. So, and it's called The Book Thief because at her brother's funeral, one of the gravediggers drops a book and she steals it. And it's called The Gravedigger's Handbook. And that starts the story. She goes in with a foster family. And rather than be what I suppose you could call a cliched sort of coming of age where the foster family are really terrible to her and it's she finds friendship elsewhere and it's, you know, all doom and gloom, you give me this look.
No, I'm just saying that stuff's all in there, though.
Her foster family are terrible to her?
No. But, well, the foster mother sort of starts off being a bit terrible.
Oh, yeah, but it's made clear that
It is. But it's very cleverly done.
Salmench. That word is used.
Pig girl.
A bazillion times in this book. It's hilarious. But it could have been one of those where she gets beaten and abused by her foster family and it's all doom and gloom. And it is a doom and gloom book, and we'll get to that in a second. But actually, it's also an extremely funny book. And it's a loving book. So anyway, we won't spoil it too much, just to say that she's living in 1939 Nazi Germany. Interesting because it is Germany, so she's not living in occupied territory. She's not living in the ghettos. She's not a...
She's just in a town.
Well, it's got to be one of the few books... Well, I don't know how... Look, I don't read that much Nazi Germany literature stuff, but this is the first one I've actually read, so there can't be that many books that are from the perspective of a young girl.
Oh, no, I don't think so. And, it did parts of it certainly brought the Anne Frank journals to mind. It's quite a different, it's a very different book.
Yeah, so the main thing is the possible speculative fiction aspect of it, although that's up for some debate, is that the narrator of the book isn't Liesl, it's Death.
Yes, Death, with a capital D.
Yes, Death. Not Terry Pratchett's Death. Not Neil Gaiman's Death. It's not some gothy girl. It's Death. It's Death. With a scythe. Well, he doesn't say. Actually, there's a joke about the scythe, isn't
it? I think Death's a she.
Oh, no. Don't. Really? You think so?
Yeah, I do.
What are you basing that on?
I think there's some maternal stuff in there.
That's fascinating. You really think that?
I do.
That's brilliant. I did not have that. Now, maybe it's because I'm
actually, a male. I went back and checked things. There's no... it's first person, obviously. Yeah, so there is no personal pronoun, but I...
Well, it's
I
just, Death. I didn't expect there to be, but you just... How do you pronounce it? Anthropomorphize.
Well, no, because that's just making it human.
Yeah, but then because I'm a male, I mean...
human means male.
Oh... We're discussing The Book Thief here by Marcus Zusak. Not about my... Yeah. You're so mean to me. Really, that's just not nice. So Death is the narrator.
Death is the narrator.
And
Death kind of tells you exactly what's going to happen from the first page.
Yeah, so in a sense we could actually just spoil the book. But as you said to me before we did
this podcast... It's not what happens. It's how and why.
Yeah, but we're not going to because we're just that sort of people. So Death is it. Death is the narrator. Now, okay, here's the thing. Because it is Death telling the story, and it's because Death obviously exists sort of outside of time.
Yep.
And because the story's already happened, it's got a lot of foreboding in it. Not like do-do-do.
Oh, there's foreboding. A bit of that.
Yeah, okay. True. But didn't that get on your tits a bit, the constant...
No, it didn't. It didn't.
I don't mean your boobs as in literally.
All
right, sorry. Keep going.
It didn't because it was done it reminded me because it's a device that I mean it's a very common device to do that but something Stephen King actually uses quite a bit in his writing.
But he uses it sparingly.
He does use it sparingly.
Like your 821 pages, your 200 pages before the end, and you'll get Mark, and that was the last time Mark was going to take something. Yeah. Yeah, you go, but I like Mark.
But, I mean, I think the way it's done in The Book Thief, it's just really cool because Death kind of says, you know, this is going to happen or you know, this won't happen, don't think it will. And it's kind of sweet. It's like Death guiding you along. And if you're, you know, the information you're given isn't complete. And there's a temptation through a lot of the book. There's something happens to one of the characters, one of Liesl's friends, And you're told from the beginning of the book what's going to happen to this person. But kind of all the way through, I was still thinking, oh, maybe not.
Exactly.
Maybe it's a trick. Maybe he's not. This isn't actually going to happen. But it does, exactly as
Death
says.
And even us telling you that, if you haven't read the book,
yeah,
you'll still, by reading it, you'll still think the same thing, even yeah. though it's inevitable. Because
And, I mean, you just need to trust Death. Death yeah. doesn't lie to you.
Yeah.
And I think it's great. I think it's wonderful to be, I mean, I guess to be told a story by a narrator who you need to trust implicitly. I mean, they're not an unreliable narrator. They're the polar opposite of an unreliable yeah. narrator. They know everything and they're not trying to fool you. It's really cool.
Oh, I don't know. It's unreliable in a different way.
Well.
Because it's playing you along.
Of course, because they're telling exactly a story. Death has to tell the story. If Death told you everything from the, why would you read it?
No, well,
there has to be some suspense and so on. But I think the foreshadowing, it's kind of nice things. It's kind of, you know, don't get too attached because, you know.
Yeah, true. No, you're right.
It's sort of this shepherding type of narration. Yeah, lovely.
But is it speculative fiction? Which is, I know it's.
I don't know. No? I don't. I mean.
So when we say this podcast is mostly speculative fiction.
Yeah, well, that's why I put the mostly in, because I have a feeling we're going to be reading a few books that probably are skirting the boundaries a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know that it is. I don't. I mean, if you take the identity of the narrator of the book out, which you easily could, yeah. except for.
Well, there are little asides from Death constantly.
There are. But, I mean, that narrator could it could simply be an authorial voice.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be Death, except there's one or two little points. I mean, Death never really intervenes, but there's a couple of points where...
You're getting into spoiler territory.
Yeah, stop. Okay. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't necessarily think just making the narrator Death makes a book spec fic. It's more a literary device than anything else.
So you don't think we can call this one of ours?
Oh, look, I don't know. I mean, I you know me. I have trouble labeling stuff.
Yeah, so. Well, maybe we shouldn't really ask that question because it is a bit of a stupid. Well, I don't know. None of it's stupid.
What I thought was really interesting.
No, I was going to ask you.
Yep.
Because just before you think that, you look at that book. This is the one. Well, I'm not going to describe the cover, but look at that. Would you know that was a young adult novel? Is that what you were about to say?
Yeah, I didn't know. I'd been looking at that book in bookshops for a while before I bought it. And it was only that someone recommended it to me and said, no, you really, really should read it. It's fantastic. Because I looked at the cover and it's a beautiful cover, but I read the back and I went, oh, another World War II book. Oh, dear. I don't know if I want to have another. So I sort of didn't, but then I bought it on a recommendation, and it's not just another World War II book.
Oh no!
And it's absolutely wonderful, but I did not know it was young adult until I was talking with someone else about it, and they brought that up, and I was really
surprised.
But
is it actually young adult?
Apparently it is. Apparently it's marketed as young adult.
Was it? So did it win a Newbery Award?
Yeah, it's actually it's won. It's won.
Kirsten's done some Wikipedia stuff. Don't say I mentioned this.
I have gotten a list of the awards it's won. Oh. Actually, thank you very much. So it's won. Wow, quite a lot. But it's won the School Library Journal Best Book of the Year, Publishers Weekly Best Children's Book of the Year, Booklist Children's Editor's Choice, the Berkey Prize, ALA Best Book for Young Adults, Kirkus Reviews Editor's Choice. I mean, the Commonwealth Writers Prize for Best Book.
Yeah, because that's the other thing. It's an Australian author.
It's an Aussie author. So it's won a load of awards, and a lot of them are young adult awards.
Why isn't it packaged as such? And is that?
Oh no, a lot of young adult books get packaged in adult ways. It's funny. I almost felt it was a weird feeling when I found out that it was a young adult book. I did air quotes again.
Yes,
sorry.
They're very cute.
Because when I was reading it, I was thinking the narration is so beautiful and so clean and you were so aware the entire way through that you were reading a book. Someone was telling you a story and deliberately telling you a story. Yeah. And I kind of missed that kind of narration in a lot of books these days. A lot of books, especially, I guess, a lot of genre books go out of their way to pretend they're not a book and you're just there in this character's head doing stuff.
Okay.
Whereas this was a very deliberate narration, and it felt really, I don't know, it was just a really interesting reading experience that I guess if I think about it, I would liken to reading when I was a child.
Okay. Because there's some of that in, this is spoilerish for our next book, but there's some of that in Deathless.
Yeah, there is a little.
But that is not a young adult book.
No, but I think that's a different type of narrative device, but we will get to Deathless.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, and I just did wonder if that's the young adult voice.
Okay.
Because I've been reading a lot of young adult stuff.
Because violence not the right word, but it's quite intense.
It's very intense. There's this part in the middle that's not even... It's a facsimile of a book that one of the characters makes.
Yeah.
Which is just... Oh, if you've got a heart, it'll break it.
Yeah. And by the way, I wanted to say... Because Alex was the first person who recommended this to me from Galactic Suburbia.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so she said...
It's a... Yeah.
Yeah, and so I just thank her as well. But this is a remarkable book. It was written 5 years ago, but I only read it now, and it's the best thing I've read this year.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the best things I've read this year. It was one of those books that are coming along... more seldom these days, where I couldn't put it down. I couldn't wait to get back to it the very next opportunity. You know, it's the sort of book I went to bed early to read.
Yeah.
it's such a good book.
Yeah, and you've actually said a lot of things that I was going to say.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. That's fine.
But I guess we're both recommending this one.
Yeah,
highly.
Absolutely. Yeah, The Book Thief, Marcus Zusak. Is it Zusak or Zuzak?
I think it's Zusak.
Okay. The copy I've got here, well, the copy you've got is Picador, but it's everywhere.
It's
still
everywhere.
Yeah,
it's widely in print. It's an international bestseller.
Yeah, well,
it's,
the New York Times has got a quote on the
Yeah,
front.
I mean, it's and deservedly so. It is an absolutely gorgeous book.
Yep, so believe the hype. This year, if you read one book,
stop that.
Okay. So, our second book is Deathless by Catherine Valenti.
Yes.
And I recommend this one to you.
Which we don't have a cover for because we read it in Galley.
Yeah.
So
where did I put it? Sorry, my head will be moving away from it. Where did I put it? It's right under here.
It's right in front of you.
You may have it.
Oh, okay.
No, I want it back.
Okay. Oh, damn. So it will be published by Tor.
If you're listening to this, I will actually buy the physical book. I won't rely
on it. And so will I.
Yeah, because the Galley's actually...
Because I love it.
Just so you know... Not that this is a podcast directly to you, Catherine Valenti, but if you're listening to this, the Galley is falling apart.
It has been very well read.
Yes, and it's got smears
on it. And it's only got two staples, so...
And smears.
Is that blood?
No, it's a smear.
Okay.
My son may have been near it.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Anyway, it will be published in April 2001, so April next year, by
yes.
Tor.
Yes.
Tor Books.
Yes.
And, yeah, no, you recommended it to me.
I did. Because I loved it, you see.
Evidently.
Yes.
This is a very boring podcast, listeners. I'm very sorry.
Can you not undermine our podcast?
I think when we envisaged this, we both, because we, Ian and I go back quite a long time.
That's true.
I've got 15 years or something like that now, right?
Well, when did you come from Newcastle?
About 15 years ago.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, and we, our taste does overlap broadly, but we've often had very vigorous debates about books that one of us will absolutely adore and the other one can't stand. So, you know, we're often, I think it will be a lot more sparksy in future. In fact, next month, I believe, it might be.
Yeah, it could be. Although I still, yeah, okay. We won't, well, let's not yeah, jump yeah. to next month. Look, for all we know, we can't do next month because we can't stand each other.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Unlikely. Deathless by Catherine Valenti.
Which we both loved.
We did. We both adored it. Now, I wrote a live journal entry on it, so I don't have to speak about this one either because mine's already...
See, if you go and do LJ reviews before you
I
do
won't.
These podcasts...
Well, you notice I didn't do one for The Book Thief.
No, you didn't. You
no,
didn't.
But I'd already read this one.
Yes.
So, and I didn't know we were going to do a podcast when I wrote this.
Oh, okay.
You see? That's
because it's kind of cheating.
Well, because I've already got notes.
Yes. And you've already done it.
No one stopped you from doing The Book Thief on your little blog, whatever it is. gets two comments once every... What?
You're so mean.
I know. Well, no one... You know why?
I'm going to edit all the funny stuff you say out of this.
You thought that was funny?
No, I'm just saying. I'm going to edit all the funny stuff out. Yeah.
You're going to edit my dance? I'm doing a dance now. I'm doing the Mondi dance. Do, do, do. Can we talk about this book, please?
Yes, let's.
So it's about the... it's based on the Slavic fairy tale. Slavic fairy tale. Of Koshay the Deathless.
Yep.
And Princess Maria Morvena.
I think very loosely based. Loosely. I mean, Koshay in this book is quite different to the...
Because you've read lots of Koshay stories, have you?
No, but I mean, he's always quite nasty and old and...
Is he?
Yeah, I think so.
See, because Kat sort of is very passionate about this book. I, you know, she wrote it. And I did speak to her about it prior to getting the galley. And the impression I got was that he's not... Well, maybe actually she never really discussed... I don't know. What am I talking about? That sentence was going somewhere and it didn't go very far.
So I sort of saw Kat's book as kind of redemptive for that character. And actually for a lot of the characters that are in the book.
Well, did you go back and read the actual... Do you know the actual myth or...
Oh, vaguely.
The fable? Did you go back and read it on Wikipedia? Because I did.
Oh, did you?
Well, there's all this implication of incest in it. Because there's three princesses and then there's King Ivan or Prince Ivan or whatever his name is. Yeah, Prince Ivan.
Yeah.
And they get sent off, like happens in Deathless. And then he goes and then ends up wanting to shag his sister. But it seems to forget that it's his sister. I've not read the original. I don't know. Does it have this whole incest pedophilia?
I don't know. It's been a while since I've read the Russian fairy tales. But I sort of remember him as certainly not being a heroic character at all.
Who, Ivan?
Yeah, well, no, Koshay.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah. Okay, yep. So basically, the genius of this book is that it's actually not set within the myth itself, although it sort of is. It's actually set during the Siege of Leningrad, except that happens a bit later. But it's set in Russia.
It's set in Russia, yeah.
But just before the war.
Yeah.
And
then during the war. But yes. I mean, it's largely...
That's not a spoiler, by the way. Even though the siege doesn't happen until later.
It will probably be on the back cover.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Where fable meets the siege
Stop
of...
Stop that.
All right. Can't I do it? It's great.
It's not great.
No?
Okay. Let's talk about the book.
All right. Well, no, please. You tell me why. You've just read it more recently than I have.
Oh, by a week.
Well, you know, if it's a great book, it'll lift a, you know.
Oh, it is a great book. It's beautiful. I love the fairy tale quality of the writing. All of the sort of the repetition of patterns and speech and things that happen. And there's all this fairy tale stuff like...
Well, the repetition of three is predominant.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's lots of like things that have to be found, things that are hidden, tasks that seem impossible that have to be done. I mean, there's beautiful, beautiful fairy tale resonances in the book, and I love that. I thought it was wonderful, and I love Baba Yaga. She was an awesome character.
Yeah, awesome. Now, can I ask you a question here, though? This is my question.
Yes.
Is this all in the head of the main character, or is this actually all happening?
Well, I guess, I mean, the answer to that question is the book spec fic or not? Because if it's all in her head, then it's not spec fic.
No. We probably shouldn't really be asking
You could that, actually ask that about just about any fantasy book. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a pointless sort of question.
Yeah. Look, it'll be marketed as fantasy, it'll be sold as fantasy.
I don't think the book is really asking that question of the reader.
No, actually it's saying...
The book isn't requiring the reader to sit down and think, you know, it's not a book like Liar by Justine Lebeau, which I'm not going to say anything more about because I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
Including me.
But you know from the cover, which you actually shouldn't read because it possibly spoils things a little, that the narrator is extremely unreliable. She's a liar. So the book is from kind of the first page demanding that the reader sit and think about everything they're reading and assess it against what may or may not be true. And I don't think Deathless does that at all.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know why, but while I was reading it, at least the first half, especially because a lot of the fantastical fairy tale stuff happens in the first half, I was sort of wondering, well, is this is this actually happening? Because then we get to the stark reality of Leningrad. And it was hard for my small brain, and it is quite small, to juxtapose, big word, that idea of the fable and the myth of, or mythology, with the just sheer terribleness of the siege. Well, and that they could happen in the same world, literally.
Well, they don't happen in the same world.
No, because the impression is that it's a sort of...
I mean, the
fairy tale alternate reality sort of...
Yeah, thing. I mean, the majority of the narrative, I guess, happens in this other world that she goes to.
It's called... What's the other
one? I mean,
you said it so beautifully before.
Bunyan, I think. You've got your live journal.
Yeah, but I didn't write it down. And that's...
Anyway, so... It does happen in another world where the rules are different and the people who are living there are different and sometimes not people at all. And sort of fairy tale rules apply there. But I mean, there's fairy tale stuff in the real world too, because you've got the...
Oh, yes. She's visited by...
Yeah, I mean, stuff happens in the real world that is fairy tale as well. It's not Narnia. You don't go through the wardrobe and it's different. You come back and everything is the same.
The fantastical elements have seeped into the real world. Like elves or whatever.
The intimation is that the fairy tales and the fables and the mythology is actually true, and it's just a part of the world. And if you're open to that, you can see it. And if you're not, and if you're, I guess, you have your eyes more solidly fixed on what consensual reality would call the world, then you will just miss the magic. But if you're more like, the main character, then you'll see things.
Well, that's interesting, because one of the things that I said in my live journal, I speculated, was this about the death of the fairy tale or the death of the fable within Russia, because you've got, communist Russia coming in and it's all... not about fables anymore, it's about communism, and whether that... Because the fantastical elements take on a communist element.
Well, they do. I mean, the revolution, I guess, seeps into all parts of Russia, including...
Yeah, but whether the revolution itself has transformed the fable and actually removed its fantastical element and turned it into something that's not a fable anymore. And you don't agree, do you? I think I've just pulled that out of my buttocks.
No. I think it's a valid reading of it. I just don't know. I think it's more that, the fairy tale part of it never dies. I mean, if anything is deathless in this book, it's the idea of magic and mysteries and things.
Well, that... I said, can I conclude?
Okay, yes.
This is me. This is tied in with that. Is it Maria or how do you...
Well, I was just saying Maria. Oh, okay, but
Maria.
Don't.
Maria's constant struggle against the forces of tradition and history is Valenti's exploration of the life and death and possible rejuvenation of the Slavic fairy tale.
Oh, there you go.
Do you think that's... You
no,
like
I
that?
Think that's a fair assessment.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, it is.
I can be a critic one day. Yeah, I like that. So the title Deathless isn't just a reference to Kosho, but it's a reference...
I don't think so. I think it's a reference to magic and what a belief in something other than the really horrible things that are around us every day can be redemptive and uplifting. I mean, it's beautiful, and Kat writes with a quality.
Oh, the writing is just gorgeous.
Yeah, it is, again, I guess, like The Book Thief, it's another book that is written as a book.
Yeah.
By a narrator telling you a story and saying, come, take my hand. I've got something to tell you. And it's great. I mean, and maybe that is why there's a childlike quality to that, because I guess that's what we remember when we were young, is our parents reading to us and telling us stories. So when we get a narrator who is talking in that way, and instead of just pretending there is no book and you are just in the head of a character or you're just somehow privy to this stuff that's happening, it's quite a different experience. I mean, and that's good too, but it's different to having someone essentially, sitting beside you saying, listen, I'm going to tell you something.
I shouldn't have done this show with you. You're far too bloody clever. Stop just saying smart things. I actually think the first third you could probably slice and say, not slice out. It's beautiful. No, I don't mean get rid of. But it's that's got a really strong young adult tone in it. It's not until it gets.
But
I know, I know.
But that's the problem. I mean, that, and I think that's what I've been saying. Because why is that a young adult tone? I mean, what is it about becoming adults that means we think we shouldn't like being told stories? Because essentially, that's the tone.
Yeah, you're right. You're
the tone
right,
is
right.
I'm telling you a story. As adults, yep. we seem to say I'm too old for stories. So I'm just going to pretend that this book I'm reading isn't actually a book and it's not telling me a story. I'm just along for the ride with these characters, which is what the majority of adult fiction tends to do.
Yep.
And it's a shame. I think that, you know, we know we're reading a book, you know, and it's a good review line to get for, you know, for any writer. When a reviewer says, oh, you know, I completely forgot I was reading a book. It's bullshit, but it's a great line.
So I went number one.
But, you know, there's yeah, the implication is that the book is so, you've forgotten you are sitting on a chair or lying in bed or on a train holding a wad of paper or perhaps an iPad in your hands. And, you know, it's, that's one approach to reading and writing.
Yeah.
And some of my favourite books are written in that way. I mean, I wrote my book in that way.
Yeah.
So, and that's fine. But the being told a story and I guess being willing to go along with a narrator, knowing it's a story, knowing it's not true, not trying to pretend it actually happened to someone somewhere, but just being told a story.
Yeah, but does that undermine the siege stuff then? Because the siege did happen to people.
No,
it's a historical event.
Of course it, well, I don't think it undermines it. I mean, you're telling a story. We're storytelling creatures. We've grown up listening to making up stories.
Because there is, again, we don't want to spoil it, but there is a dramatic shift, I think, for me, in that tone, when we get to the siege. You don't agree, though.
No, I think it is, but I think the tone comes with, I guess, with Maya growing up, because she grows up, that break, there's a section break there,
yeah,
so you start a new part,
yeah.
And when we come back to her, she's older, she's much more tired,
yeah.
She's, you know, she has experienced a lot and gone through a lot, and she's a completely different person to the Maya we've been through the book so far.
Yeah, okay.
So I think the tone definitely shifts, and I don't think taking stuff that has happened and weaving it into story makes that any less real or less respectful.
Oh, there is a line of thought that says that to fictionalize something that really happened to real people is something you shouldn't do, especially if in a fantasy context.
Shouldn't do?
Well, okay, should. No, just that, you know, that it.
This is what we do.
Can be perceived as offensive. Oh, no, you can write lots of non-fiction books about it and go through the guts of what occurred and that and even write some, you know, real accounts. But to put fictional characters in that world who suffer in the same way as anyone else would have suffered in that time is undermining the true events that occurred. I'm not saying it's my argument. I'm just saying that is an argument.
No, I know it's an argument. I don't know.
I think Deathless is very respectful. This is not Catherine Valenti trying to make a buck out of the Siege of Leningrad.
Good luck doing that.
Yeah, exactly. I can't believe we're laughing. But
No, I mean, and you know, as far as great tragedies in human history goes, the Siege of Leningrad hasn't exactly got the glamour.
No.
So.
No, true.
But. No, I don't. I mean, I know that
I felt
that
really hungry and cold reading those last.
Yeah, I know that argument's there. I don't think it's a particularly helpful argument. I mean, it's we tell stories. We tell stories about ourselves. We tell stories about people we know, things we've read, things we've seen. It's how we make sense of our world. And if a way of making sense of our world is taking something that's happened in the past and writing about it in a fictional way, I don't see a problem with that.
That's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And are we at an hour yet?
Oh, I think we. We're about a minute away.
Yeah. See, what I'm getting the feeling here because we'll probably end there with regard. Because I mean, yes. We highly recommend Deathless.
Yes,
highly
recommend
when it comes out.
And we will remind you next April to.
We will definitely
remind
you. I actually said in my live journal that if it doesn't get nominated for a World Fantasy Award, I'll eat something that's not food.
Ooh.
like a hat or your headphones that you're wearing.
No.
Kirsten's wearing these cute little headphones right now. She's trying to check the sound quality of this thing.
Well, it's because you keep going out of range of your microphone and I've got to remind you to...
Again, professional. Do not say things that I'm doing. But yeah, anyway, I think that's World Fantasy. That's got World Fantasy written all over it, in my opinion. As a, how would I know? I haven't exactly read every World Fantasy potential book from 2011.
Well, I mean, it's none of them have come out
correct,
yet.
Correct, so. Yeah, that's right. But I would be a bit up, because I think it's the mature sort of fantasy novel that deserves to be recognised.
I think so, and I think it's...
Oh, you agree with me?
I do, I think it's a very different kind of fantasy.
We haven't discussed the gender stuff in it. Does it? That's another whole podcast, I suppose.
That probably is.
The empowerment, the fact that it's a love triangle... where she fits and what Kat's saying, whether even that's important to the story, actually.
Oh, I think that's important to the story. I think we're going to go over an hour.
Yeah, I'll bugger it. Let's go over an hour. I mean, we're only doing these once every month, so,
No. I think that's... the story is about the girl who grows up to become a woman. And she's the central character, and she's the driving force of the narrative.
And she's independent. And,
she's
and
absolutely
she's
independent.
She's very proactive, but loses that. I mean, I don't blame her. Siege of Leningrad, I can't say that enough, but very much the proactive force in that first half. And Koschei is very much woven by her spell to a degree. Well, sort of.
It's a mutual spell, I think.
Yeah, true. Yeah. And then Ivan comes along.
As Ivans do.
And again, minor spoiler, but that bit in the tent, when he's told by sort of the soothsayer-y sort of character, I forgot because I haven't read it for a few weeks, about what's going to happen to him.
Oh, yes.
You know, if you open that tent and walk
in
there.
Yes, and he does anyway.
Yeah, that is genius.
Well, it's the inevitability. Genius. It's the inevitability of
the story.
Of the story and of the tradition that it's coming from.
Yeah.
And that's another really beautiful thing about this book. It's an inevitable narrative. You know, there are delightful surprises and things that happen which are wonderful, but the overall narrative, there's no sudden twist. There's no, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. And
the Nazis win the war.
But there doesn't have to be. I mean, a book. This is why we can read books again and again and again. Because if they're beautiful books and they're stories that we love, it doesn't matter if they're stuff we know and expect. And sometimes the expecting or the realization of what we expect, there's a pleasure in that you know, the emphasis on the twist ending and stuff. It doesn't deliver.
Yeah, you're right. It's amazing. You're right. It's a beautifully inventive book. There's some really imaginative stuff early on. But you're right, it's not one that's all about the plot and the twists and the turns. It's about
the inevitable. I mean, you know when you hear a fairy tale how it's going to end.
Yeah.
You know that. And, I mean, it isn't quite a happily ever after book, I wouldn't say. But it doesn't mean you don't want to hear the fairy tale.
Yep.
And it doesn't mean you don't want to read the book, even though you kind of... It's not that you know where it's going because it's transparent and predictable. There's just a familiarity about the story that you remember from reading these sort of things when you were younger. And it's great. It's so well written and so skillfully written. It's really, really clever. I love the writing.
Jealous?
Very jealous.
Come on, the odd turn of phrase you thought,
oh, I wish I had that one.
All right, well, anyway, on that
but
note.
But I found a typo, so.
Did you? Oh, you mean that's a galley.
I know.
Oh, yeah, I found a typo. I win. On that note, now we're not finishing yet, so don't turn your iPod off. Not that you
would. I don't think people do
no,
that.
No, they don't. They're just like, oh, they're done.
They're done. That's it.
But that's basically it for the show itself. But
yes.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to do. Bit of rant at the start. Book reviews with a bit of rant in the middle. Now, what we're thinking of doing for future podcasts, although this has gone for an hour, so obviously the future ones will likely go for 6 to 7 weeks.
They better not.
Yeah, I love you. I don't want this to be a really long one. See, the thing is, when we get on a roll and I do this sort of tangential stuff, it just...
This is what happens.
It does. So future is... What I want to do, Kirsten's not so keen, is that people write in. We're going to give you an email address, which I've forgotten. Do you remember it?
It's not that hard.
It's the name of the podcast. What's the name of the podcast?
It's writer and critic
at gmail.com.
That's it.
Yeah. Writer and critic, spelled...
All one word.
Yeah, all one word. If you don't know how to spell writer and critic, you probably shouldn't be listening to the podcast.
Yeah, probably not.
Actually, and even if you don't, it'll be on the iTunes when we put...
We'll link to it.
Yeah. We'll link to the email. Yeah, we'll put a link on the email. Yeah, anyway, point being... that we'd like you, well, I, Ian, would like you to write in with your books that you'd like us to do. See, the whole idea being, I recommend one to you, recommend one to me, and the listeners recommend one to us.
I don't like that
idea. We haven't read. That you won't know, we'll have to choose it, because obviously...
What if we read it?
No, well, that's... Well, hopefully we'll get more than one email with one suggestion,
and
we can...
put a list of books that we've read.
Okay. No, well, I'm happy to write back to everyone, and I will say... I'm sorry, don't put your Lord of the Rings suggestion in because we both read it. Some people love Lord of the Rings.
I know.
But if they said Similarian,
Similarian? No, see, this Neither is why... No,
we'd have to choose it. I can write back and say, we think your choice is dreadful and we'd rather die. We can do that. So I think it'd be great.
Maybe.
Well, look, we can try it out, see how it goes.
Oh, here we go. Well, I don't like... reading books that I don't like is what it comes down to.
I don't like reading books I don't like.
No, what I mean, I used to start a book and finish it, and I could not finish it.
Yeah.
I, just in case it had this brilliant, 90% of it was crap, but maybe the ending was just so perfect, I had to finish the book. And they never were. So I decided years ago that, I'd give a book, I don't know, certainly no more than 25%
of its length. Okay, but why can't you can do the same thing with this?
No, because I have to finish it. I've got to finish
it. No, the review is, I read the first 25 pages, it was shit. Sorry, listener, my mum, it was crap, Miriam Mond.
All right, well,
the worst book I've ever read.
I wouldn't say that to your mum, but okay.
Oh, okay, I can pass a message on that.
Okay, but if I can do that, if I can stop reading the book.
I'll do the same.
Okay.
And if you recommend a book to me, like the one you're going to recommend to me, and I think it's...
No, I think the books we recommend to each other, we have to finish. That's the deal.
Because
otherwise
we
can't have a talk about them.
All right, this is going to go on for another
hour. If the talk is, what did you think of the book? And your answer is, I read the first 10 pages and threw it away. This is going to be the world's shortest podcast, which may not be a bad thing.
Yeah. Okay, so all right, fine. All right, that's one thing we're thinking of doing. And the other
it's a possible suggestion.
We'll end up doing it. And... I'm really not the dominant one in this, I promise. The other thing is, if we can work out the technology, we'll interview people.
Yeah, that would be neat.
Yeah, that'd be great. Some of them will actually even invite to your house.
Yes.
Do you want people to know where you live?
No.
Not in general. No, but the
don't broadcast it again.
Anyway, but it's like we can have people come over.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And if you don't live in Melbourne.
We'll work out how to...
You'll work out because I wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah, we can do Skype interviews and splice them in. That'll be fine.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the other thing. So that's really it, I mean, when it comes to ideas, because we really don't want this to go for...
That's it.
...hours. It's going to be monthly, as I said. It's not going to be weekly or fortnightly because we just don't really like being in the same room together for that long.
No, definitely not. And hopefully it should go for about an hour. It's gone for a bit longer tonight because it's the first one and we had some intro stuff to do.
There is no chance they will go for an hour. If we're interviewing someone, they will go for an hour and a half. You're getting... It's one a month. So if you like... Wait. I have a backlog of podcasts, right? That's why I'm behind on Galactic Suburbia and Adventures in Sci-Fi, whatever. I'm behind on these things. They go for... But I don't mind, But when they come out weekly and they go for an hour and a half, that's tough.
You just skip them.
No, I don't. I still listen to them.
Oh, okay.
Like Jonathan Strand, seriously, mate, shorten it because it's tough, I mean, you're 28 hours of stuff if I don't keep... I shouldn't have said that. He's going to get upset with me.
He will.
Yeah.
We can edit that.
But Gary K. Wolf has got... It's K, I think. Has got a really cute podcast voice. Anyway, so on that, I'll tell you who's got... Grant does short ones. They're good. We'll finish. Now, how are we going to end this?
Well, I think we just say goodbye.
All right. Well, let's...
And I think, again, we'll...
Should we have like some cute tagline or something for the end?
I think it took us long enough to get that tagline we had at the beginning.
Kirsten wrote it, so if you don't like it.
Email again is writerandcritic@gmail.com. And if you have any feedback or you want to just tell Ian to shut up, please feel free.
That's really unfair.
Why?
That is unfair. We don't have a Twitter thing. We don't have a Facebook
thing.
We
may in the future.
Yeah, we may, you know, if we get more than 5 or 6 listeners. Yeah, so that's it. So it's a buy for me, and I'm so proud that I've done a podcast. Really, honestly, you don't – I'm ticking this off a list. There is a list. And one day my son who's
– Should we say what books we're doing for next month?
Oh, yeah, we'll do that. Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, I just want to say that my son will one day listen to this and feel proud of his dad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So what are you recommending to me, Kirsten?
Well, I'm recommending The Red Tree by Caitlin R. Kiernan, which I read either very late last year or very early this year, which is – I think her best novel. It's really, really good.
And I noticed Jeff Vandermeer had a lot of nice things to say about it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Jeff Vandermeer.
So, there you go.
Yes. And I'm recommending Feed by Seanan McGuire, which I've already live journaled online.
Well, it's by Myra Grant.
Okay, Myra Grant, a.k.a. Seanan McGuire.
Yes.
It's already a review on my live journal.
Which I haven't read, and I won't read until I finish the book.
Read what?
Your review.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because we've obviously pre-discussed this.
Yes.
Yeah, Curiosity Show and all that. So
that's it.
You're nearly finished.
So, yes. Yeah, so next month we will talk about The Red Tree and Feed.
Yeah, so probably just before Christmas.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Probably in the middle of the month.
Yeah, okay.
Excellent.
All right, well, from us it's bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening.